Oh, that's a good art.
Bill Hammond Serenading Imagine Worlds is a survey exhibition currently on view at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery. Hammond, born in 1947, was a Lyttelton-based artist with a career spanning over four decades and is widely recognised as one of the most influential and original painters in Aotearoa. Although best known for his bird-human hybrid paintings, which largely defined his practice from the 1990s onwards, Serenading Imagine Worlds surveys and traces the preceding chapters of his practice, inviting the viewer to engage with a panoramic sweep of his career. From his handcrafted wooden works, prints, to his edgier paintings of the 1980s exploring popular culture, music and politics, and the otherworldliness of his Auckland Islands-inspired works, the show reveals the essence of who Hammond was, an artist who experimented, challenged, and was attuned to the possibility of reinvention. I had a kōrero with director at Te Uru, A.D. Scherning, about Hammond and Serenading Imagine Worlds.
Bill was born in 1947. He's really associated with Christchurch. He lived in Lyttelton and went to Ilam. He didn't graduate, but he did start art school. He's exhibited extensively in Christchurch and was shown with the Judith Griffith Gallery down there, and obviously McLeavy Gallery. Peter McLeavy was a big part of his trajectory, as was Peter Webb up in Auckland. But he's one of those artists, a bit like McCann, that's a sort of mainstay in our art history and a really important painter who has a style that is uniquely New Zealand, I suppose.
You curated this show with Hohua Thompson, and I guess I'd love to hear a little bit about your personal relationship with Hammond's work as well. When did you first come across his work and what struck you about it?
Gosh, yeah, I don't know when my first interaction with his work would have been, but I did become very familiar with his work when I was working at Webb's Auction House and having to, appraise several of his works and get quite familiar with them. I got to see a real breadth of his practice that you don't see outside of that very unique perspective. And that's where I did encounter his early wooden carvings and wooden works and, his drawings or etchings and things that aren't, the sort of post-Auckland Island visit bird creature paintings that he's so well known for. These sort of lesser known works to me were really fascinating, and I think that was a big part of my drive to show people a bigger breadth of what he does or did, as an artist.
Yeah, totally. As you say, it's this show, Serenading Imagine Worlds, is quite amazing as it is really taking the viewer back to less familiar works and sides of his practice and surveying his career and practice, capturing four distinct phases of his practice across his lifetime. Are you able to kind of speak to the scope of the exhibition and these distinct genres within his overall practice?
Yes. So I wouldn't say it's a full survey in a way. It's a pretty hard thing to do with any artist to show the full extent of their career. So by breaking it into these four sort of parts, I wanted to show the wooden works, and Hoho and I sourced those, which was fun, and to show the early drawings and to show that the real vibrancy of his 1980s paintings that were sort of pre that shift to the anthropomorphic bird paintings that he's known for. So that was sort of the final chapter and what we've shown in the exhibition. But yeah, I suppose we just focused on those points of difference, but also showing the connections between the different sort of stages in his career, rather than, you could just survey you know, a few years of his life, and that would be a very full show as well. But we wanted to show the expanse of it and the different parts, but also those connections.
You mentioned the, these connections between these different phases, and I think what's quite interesting about this exhibition is, although you're seeing Hammond experiment with different styles and tones, his work and artistic voice and vision is still distinctly his and very recognisable. How would you kind of describe this approach to art making that Hammond had and that can be seen across his practice? Was there a subject of interest that defined this distinctive vision of his?
It's a hard thing to speak on behalf of an artist, you know, especially when they're no longer with us. But, you know, as someone working on this exhibition, you can see from the early wooden works, you know, there's a playfulness and experimentation and this sort of imagination that he has, which I think is the thing that is so easily connecting throughout the work. Like in one of the wooden works, you've got this little sort of creature, and then you've got text, which is about dance. You know, it's connected to music and dance and lyrics and things that we see later in his paintings. But the creatures, you know, these bird-headed creatures, people that we see in the post-Auckland Island works are also evident through the early works as well. You've got, in his etchings, you've got these duck-headed, you know, creatures, like a platypus, I think it is. So, yeah, the evidence of his imagination and the way that his mind works is the thing that I think is cohesive throughout, and I suppose that's the same for any artist, that you can see a little bit of who they are throughout their whole career and work, because that's the one thing that never changes, even though their influences might shift and their interests might develop. That's the one static thing.
You've, of course, mentioned, it goes without saying with talking about Hammond's work, these bird-human hybrid paintings, which were such a turning point in his practice and are most recognisable and most famous. I'd love to hear a little bit more, I guess, about what we know about the shift in his practice, though. Do we know how this subject developed? Can you kind of speak to that?
A little bit. So in 1989, he went on a trip to the Auckland Islands with a group of artists, and that had a profound impact on him, I suppose, and resulting in an impact on his work, which is sort of evident in the exhibition when you look at the works from the 1980s, which are there, and then the works from the 1990s. So we kind of wanted to have works that were sort of either side of that shift in his work, so quite close to the time that there was that significant change in his work. Going to the Auckland Islands, I think being in a place that didn't have the level of human interaction that we have here, he saw this place that was run by birds in a way, I suppose, and that sort of imagination of what nature would be like, or what Aotearoa would look like had it not encountered humans, I think is where he's gone with that. And you get these amazing creatures. I mean, that's just one of the many layers of his work. There are so many other things that are in them. They're filled with signifiers and, you know, meanings that I don't think any art historian would be able to decipher entirely. There's just so many layers and so much detail in all of his work.
Yeah, you like mentioned beforehand that although it's a survey exhibition, it's also just a snapshot of his practice and career. And I can imagine it is quite a challenge to pull together a cohesive body of work for a historical solo exhibition. Can you tell me a little bit about the process of collecting these works and where these works have been sourced from?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a lot of help with that. And, you know, Hohua and I worked with external help to make this happen. So the team at Webb's Auction House, they helped me to source some work. They also very generously funded the exhibition, which was amazing. And Art and Object also helped us to source some works. Charles Nino, who's an old colleague of mine from my Webs days, also gave me some sort of pointers in terms of where those works might be held that we needed to source. Mostly they are from private collections, and we're very grateful to those people to have loaned us their works for, you know, about 3 months and have an empty wall for that period of time. But other works have come from public collections as well.
Well, it's been so great to hear you talk more about the show. I guess for you, what do you kind of think the ongoing legacy of Hammond's work is in Aotearoa, or maybe the significance of having a show like this on at Te Uru?
I suppose the significance of having it here, you know, I mean, I had always had a fascination with Hammond and thought it would be great to show people these other aspects of his practice, but I did discover from being here at Te Uru that he lived in Tiranga for 2 years. So he lived here 1971 and 1972. So to me, that's pretty significant. You know, we do, there's a lot of amazing artists that have spent time in the hills here. So it's nice to have that connection to the time that he spent here, and that's when he started making the wooden works as well. So kind of a cool legacy to connect into that.
Yeah, beautiful. So special to have them back home in some way.
In a way, and also, you know, there were some very, very cool exhibitions that were developed by Christchurch Art Gallery that didn't tour up to Auckland, so it's actually the first time in a really long time that there's been, well, I don't know when the last time there was a significant showing of Hammond's work in Auckland, so that's part of the drive as well, to give people an opportunity to see work that hasn't, you know, aired in Auckland for a long time, or, you know, ever, some of it. Yeah, it's a great opportunity to see the breadth of Hammond's work, so come along and visit us.
That was A.D. Scherning speaking to me about their current exhibition on view at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery, Bill Hammond Serenading Imagine Worlds. The show is on until the 22nd of February, so be sure to check it out.